Hi, my name's Samantha Smith, and I'm the Vice President for Corporate Social Responsibility at Nautilus Minerals, the first company to commercially explore the seafloor for copper, gold, zinc, and silver deposits. This talk discusses environmental and social responsibility as it relates to deep-sea mineral production. So, working for a publicly listed company means showing a slide like this one when giving a talk. In summary, it says that what I'm sharing with you today is to the best of our knowledge true and accurate, but please bear in mind things can and do change. Now, this is where I give away my punchline. The basic premise of my talk is as follows. The world's demand for metals and minerals is rising, including to meet the demands of the green economy. These minerals and metals need to come from somewhere, and Nautilus proposes that deep-sea mineral production offers many social and environmental advantages for mineral development. Also, Nautilus is committed to setting a high environmental and social responsibility standard, and I'll provide some examples of this. So, we've said that the world's demand for minerals and metals is on the rise. Here we see a graph showing year along the horizontal axis and the amount of copper produced on the vertical axis. We can see that copper production, which is directly linked with consumption, has been rising steadily since the middle of the last century. And it is projected that the world's consumption of copper over the next 25 years will exceed all of the copper metal ever mined to date. What this means is that even if we could recycle every bit ever mined, we would still need to find new sources of copper to meet the world's demand. Historically, the demand has been met using land-based resources, but land-based resources are becoming stretched with increasing associated economic, social, and environmental costs. We, as society, are moving more rock per ton of metal, we're processing more rock per ton of metal, we're building larger waste rock dumps, and there's an increasing challenge of what to do with the tailings and other wastes. Getting to the ore bodies on land often means cutting down trees, contributing to deforestation and erosion. And there are increasing land use conflicts, and metal demand is outpacing supply. Many of us like the idea of moving towards a green economy, which includes the use of alternative energy sources over fossil fuels. What we must realize, though, is that by choosing alternative energy technologies, yes, we are moving away from a dependency on fossil fuels, but we are increasing our dependency on and demand for minerals and metals. Copper plays an important role in renewable energy systems. For example, a single 2-megawatt wind turbine contains 4 to 6 tons of copper or more, depending on the type of generator used in the wind turbine. Wind power requires significantly more metal to produce power than conventional power generation. Another example of where copper plays an important role is in the electric vehicle. An electric vehicle contains over twice the copper content of a conventional car, and if you stretched out all that copper wiring, it would reach over 2 kilometers long. We need to be conscious of the choices we are making as we make them and realize that the minerals and metals to feed these technologies will need to come from somewhere. And as we've already discussed, land resources are becoming stretched. This slide serves as a reminder that we live on a blue planet. Blue because 70% of its surface is comprised of water. Historically, mining has taken place on the other 30%, the land part, or another way of looking at it, the more rare part. But is this the most responsible approach? We argue a holistic approach to decision-making is needed and ask, can minerals from the blue part of our planet help to meet the world's demand for minerals and metals? I've mentioned choices already, and we as society do have some choices to make, starting with our lifestyles and standard of living. If we're going to choose to continue our current level of lifestyle, which includes iPods and iPhones and iPads and computers and the internet and cars and planes and buildings, etc., and other people from other nations strive for a similar standard, then we must accept that the world's demand for minerals and metals is going to continue to rise. And as I've just discussed, it will also continue to rise if we are to meet the demands of alternative energy technologies. So where are these minerals going to come from? Now we have another choice to make. We can choose to do things as they always have been done and continue to look for minerals on land. But what are we really choosing by doing this? Are we choosing to mine lower and lower grades of material? Are we choosing to remove mountains and trees to get to ore bodies, typically with 75% of what is moved ending up as waste? Most or all of us can acknowledge that every human activity impacts on the environment in one way or another, and it is our job, if we are to be responsible citizens of this planet, and if we are to be responsible caretakers of this planet, to limit the impacts we have on the environment. So what if we could choose to extract minerals from deposits with grades 10 times higher than what is currently mined on land? What if we didn't have to remove mountains or trees to get to the ore body? Wouldn't it make sense to at least consider an alternative with not just fewer environmental impacts, but with fewer social impacts as well? So this is where Nautilus Minerals got its start, thinking about making a change for the better in terms of mineral extraction. Nautilus is the first company to commercially explore the seafloor for seafloor massive sulfide deposits with high grades of copper, gold, zinc, and silver. Just to give an example of what we mean by high grade, if we look at the chart on the right, we can see that the average reserve grade of land-based copper projects, provided in blue, is today around 0.6% copper. So Aura 1, the first seafloor massive sulfide deposit proposed for development, on the other hand, contains on average more than 7% copper, over 10 times what is being mined on land. One of the other things we like about these deposits is that if you go down to the seafloor with a camera and lights, you can see the deposit. It sits above the seafloor. This means there is a minimal amount of material that needs to be removed in order to get to the deposit. There are no mountains to remove, and this means there is less waste. Between the high grade and minimal waste, less ore is needed to provide the same amount of metal, resulting in a much smaller physical footprint than a seafloor massive sulfide's land-based counterparts. And no one lives in the deep sea, so no people need to be relocated in order for mining to proceed. Other advantages include no need for blasting or toxic chemicals during the mining process, and the infrastructure involved is reusable. As I just mentioned, Nautilus's first project is called Solwara 1, which is a copper-gold deposit located in the Bismarck Sea in Papua New Guinea. For those of you who don't know, Papua New Guinea, or PNG as it's known, is the country just to the north of Australia. Solwara 1 is in 1,600 meters water depth, and the extraction area is small, only 0.11 kilometers squared. One of the reasons such a small deposit can still be economic is due to the high grades found there. As Nautilus develops this project, it is dedicated to setting a high environmental and social responsibility standard, and I'll be providing some examples throughout this talk. This slide summarizes the proposed production method at Solwara 1. There are three key components to the system: tools, which cut up the mineralized material on the seafloor and deliver it to a pump, then the riser pipe, which is a fully enclosed system that transports the mineralized material from the seafloor to the surface, and lastly, there's a ship at the surface. Nautilus recognizes that it is leading the way at the dawn of a new industry, and that this is an opportunity for the mining industry to start with a clean sheet. In terms of social and environmental responsibility, we examine what had been done historically by other mining and oil and gas companies seeking approval. We recognized early on that there are two types of approval, one with a legal basis with a well-defined process, and a second which involves obtaining a social license to operate from concerned stakeholders. As far as the legal process goes, there are two key permits that must be obtained before any mining operation can go ahead in Papua New Guinea: a mining lease, which is issued by the Mineral Resources Authority through the Mining Act 1992, and an environment permit, which is issued by the Department of Environment and Conservation through the Environment Act 2000. The Mining Act had the foresight to include minerals beneath the sea. Both of these permits have been granted for the Solwara 1 project. With respect to obtaining a social license to operate, on the other hand, there is a much broader list of considerations compared to the legislative process. Obtaining a social license involves gaining general acceptance from concerned stakeholders who often have diverse values and opinions. And at the end of the day, what people think matters. So what do people think when they think about mineral deposits associated with the deep sea? And it's important to recognize that value means different things to different people, and people think different things. For example, geologists may look at the potential deep-sea deposit and think of a puzzle requiring a list of studies to understand it. Biologists may see an ecological value, perhaps something to protect. Engineers may see a challenge. Host countries may see a new source of income that can lead to infrastructure such as schools, hospitals, and roads, etc. Host countries may also see a new source of employment for its people. Of course, a minerals company will see metals and an income, but perhaps it also sees a chance to make a positive difference. NGOs and/or conservationists may see an ecological value, or perhaps they see a cause, bearing in mind some groups are fundamentally opposed to mining and will rally up against a project no matter how responsible approach a company takes. And the general public is hearing all of these viewpoints and values and is probably left wondering what to think of it all. So how do we make sure all of these different values and opinions are taken into account when developing a project? Recognizing that these diverse values and opinions are important to consider in project development, Nautilus took an early, transparent, inclusive stakeholder engagement approach. Stakeholders with all those diverse values and opinions helped to design the environmental impact assessment for the Sawarra 1 project. They informed us about who should do the various studies. They worked with us to put together the environmental impact statement. And Nautilus is now using the same approach to develop its environmental management plans for the project. One of the outcomes of these engagements was a list of studies recommended for the Sawarra 1 environmental impact assessment and baseline surveys. This list is not exhaustive, but there are a couple of things worth pointing out. First of all, scientists completed genetic studies at three sites within the Bismarck Sea, the sea where Sawarra 1 is located, as part of the baseline environmental survey to help understand Sawarra 1 biology within a more regional context and to inform management plans. As far as we know, this goes beyond what is usually required for an environmental impact assessment or environmental impact statement. The other thing I'd like to point out, and this is something that I'm extremely proud of, is that with all the research Nautilus has done and continues to do in the deep sea, we have the additional objective of ensuring that we are contributing to the global knowledge of the deep sea environment and deep sea processes. We are passionate about ensuring that science also benefits from the research we do. One of the ways we ensure this happens is by collaborating with scientific partners to conduct environmental studies. A commitment Nautilus has made, which again is something I'm very proud of, is that collaborating researchers are free to publish their findings. And to date, work related to the Sawarra 1 project has resulted in over 35 publications in peer-reviewed journals and/or as presentations at international conferences. The studies completed fed into the EIS, which was then reviewed by the PNG Department of Environment and Conservation, who in turn engaged an independent consultancy to review the EIS. Their thorough review led to the Sawarra 1 EIS being approved and the environment permit granted in late 2009. To ensure transparency, Nautilus has posted the entire Sawarra 1 EIS and all supporting studies on its website. This cartoon summarizes the expected impacts from the mineral extraction at Sawarra 1. One thing to note is that the image is not to scale, and a more representative scale is shown on the left. The main point of showing this slide is that an interesting finding during our stakeholder consultation process and workshops was that, in general, the international community was mostly interested in impacts to the seafloor, which, of course, is where the impacts will be focused, while the local communities from PNG are much more concerned about potential impacts to surface waters, and in particular to fish such as tuna. Again, both sets of values and concerns needed to be considered and addressed. In terms of limiting impacts to the seafloor and deep sea environment, Nautilus is committed to a number of impact minimization and mitigation strategies that have been developed with a team of independent, world-renowned experts. I'm very proud to say that every single one of the team's recommendations was accepted by Nautilus and made part of the Sawarra 1 project's plans. Some of the protection measures include setting aside a reference site within the mining lease which will remain untouched by mining. This is to help the recolonization of Saguaro 1, but it also serves as a site to examine natural variability of the environment away from any impact of mining. There will also be refuge areas established within Saguaro 1 itself, which will not be mined. Nautilus is also committed to relocate representative animals out of the path of mining into installing appropriate artificial substrates, like the one shown in the image here, to help the relocated animals reestablish themselves. It seems Nautilus is the first company to consider restoration in the deep sea, despite the deep sea already being an impacted place from various human activities. Last year, together with Duke University, Nautilus organized and funded a multi-stakeholder expert workshop to explore restoration considerations and options in the deep sea. This resulted in a manuscript which has been accepted for publication in Marine Policy. Again, these are efforts we are very proud to be involved with. In terms of ensuring surface waters and pelagic fish such as tuna remain protected, Nautilus has again made a number of commitments. These include using a fully enclosed ore delivery system, which ensures that minerals and metals from the seafloor don't come into contact with the water column or surface waters. No hazardous chemicals will be used during the mining process, and there will be no blasting. Not only will no tailings be discharged to sea, we're working on a concentrator solution that could mean no tailings whatsoever being generated from this project. We have committed to using biodegradable fluids, including oils, in all equipment used subsea. This means that even if there is a leak, the impact of that leak will be minimal. You might have noticed on the impacts diagram that there is a naturally occurring plume in the water column from an active subsea volcano. Nautilus has committed to keeping all mining impacts beneath this plume, so all extraction impacts will be deeper than 1,300 meters water depth, which is well below where tuna and other pelagic species live. In summary, the world's demand for metals and minerals is on the rise, including to meet the demands of a green economy. Seafloor resource production offers many social and environmental advantages for mineral development. Nautilus Minerals has taken a responsible approach to develop the Saguaro 1 project, and we are committed to ensuring transparency, to taking a multi-stakeholder approach, to ensuring independence of the studies that are conducted. And despite all the work that has already been done, it's still not too late to have input, and we welcome input. Thank you very much for your time.